So, yes, I had this sort of fairly friendly, in a way, casual contact with Delgado Kense. I could go along and see him with Sherab Nanga, or later on with my manager, Lobsang Norbu, as interpreter, whenever I felt like it. And I must have talked about Delgado Kense with Mr. Chen, who, of course, knew, at least by reputation, all the incarnate lamas. Mr. Chen may well have actually met Delgado Kense in Tibet, because he'd certainly met Jomyang Kense and had received initiations from him. And I think it must have been Mr. Chen who advised me to ask Delgado Kense for initiations. I've been thinking it over just today. A few memories sort of vaguely come back to me. I did receive from Delgado Kense in that same room, in that little wooden cottage, the Kurukule initiation, the Jambala initiation, and an Amitabha initiation connected with the Purwa or transference of consciousness practice. And I seem to remember, I think I can be fairly certain of this, that Mr. Chen, was well aware of the fact that I was doing my best to work for the good of Buddhism, in Kashyapji's words, or the words of Kashyapji's injunction to me in 1950. And Mr. Chen, I think, was well aware that working for Buddhism wasn't easy, that you needed all sorts of things. And Mr. Chen, of course, took his Buddhism and his Vajrayana in some ways quite literally. So I do remember Mr. Chen urging me to get the initiation of Jambala from Delgado Kense so that wealth would come to me for the sake of my Dharma work, and to get the initiation of Kurukule so that popularity would come to me for the sake of my Dharma work, because Kurukule represents fascination, attraction, that particular tantric function. Jambala, of course, obviously represents wealth. I can't say that I took that quite literally, but nonetheless, I used to take what Mr. Chen said quite seriously, so I did ask Delgado Kense, for those initiations, and he very kindly agreed to give me. There seemed to be no difficulty at all. He quite pleased to give you whatever you wanted, and he conducted the initiation in just his own characteristic way. There was the usual ritual, quite simple. I think the ceremony only lasted an hour or two, or each ceremony, and he was just his own, kindly, fatherly, unpretentious self. His old wife hovering in the background and just sort of helping, And as regards the Purwa practice of Amitabha, Mr. Chen was a great believer in this. I don't think he'd had much experience of it himself, but I remember him telling me that his wife practiced it very successfully in China. And I think he further told me that Delgado Kense was well versed in this practice, and it would be a good idea if I was to obtain the necessary initiation and instruction from him. It was an oral tradition, and I wrote down. I still have the notes that I made on this practice. But though I've done the Amitabha part of the practice, I must admit I've never actually done the transference of consciousness part of it. Maybe that's something that I should keep for my relative old age. Though, of course, on the other hand, one mustn't put off these sort of things indefinitely. But anyway, these were the three initiations I got from it. It's possible that I received others, which perhaps, I'm sorry to say, I might have forgotten. But I have made notes of all these things. I do have a notebook or several notebooks somewhere at Papaloka, where I've written down the dates of all the initiations I had in some particulars. So I'll have to have a look. But all this, of course, happened in in Kaling Kong, late 50s, early 60s, and I did remain in contact with Dilgo Khyentse right up to the time of my departure in 1964. As far as I recollect, he was in Kalimpong all that time and remained, you know, very easily accessible. Anyway, I did come to the West, as you know, and I returned to India for that farewell visit after 2 years. I spent a week in Kalimpong, and I met, of course, Dr. Rinpoche, Mr. Chen, and other friends. I also visited Darjeeling, and at that time, Dilgo Khyentse was living in Darjeeling with his wife. I don't remember the daughters being there. They may have left. One of them may have married by that time. But I remember Dilgo Khyentse living somewhere in the bazaar, again in very poor circumstances, and I went to pay him a visit. And by that time, I knew that the trustees of the English Sangha Trust didn't want me back. And I told Dilgo Khyentse about this. He was one of the people I did tell. I told Dr. Rinpoche too. And Dilgo Khyentse said, I can't remember exactly what he said, but the purport of it was, never mind, don't take any notice, just go back and carry on with your own work, which is more or less what Dr. Rinpoche said to. They seemed to attach, though I was quite concerned at that, they seemed to attach no importance whatever to what, anything that the trust might say or think or do. They seemed to think I should just ignore it and just carry on with my work. This was quite definitely, you know, the attitude of both Dilgo Khyentse and Dr. Rinpoche. They said, what are you bothering about? What is this fuss? You know, doesn't matter, just go back and carry on. Doesn't make any difference. So I remember that meeting, but I also remember it because Dilgo Khyentse and his wife, especially his wife, wanted to give me something as a little parting present, but they had nothing to give. They were so poor at that time. But his wife searched around and she found a little kambar knife about so long, with a bone handle and in a little sheath with a bit of silver mounting, and she gave me that, saying, well, we're very sorry, we'd like to give you something, but this is all we're able to give, please accept it. And of course I still have that in my study at Babaloka. Some of you might have seen it, but not knowing what the history of it was. Yes. So that was their parting present. But actually that wasn't the last time I saw them. Because I don't know whether I returned to Kalimpong, I can't remember, but from the hills, let's say, I went down, I went back to Calcutta and was there for several weeks, mainly arranging to transport my books and other things to England. And I happened to visit the Bengal Buddhist Association, and there in their guest quarters, the Gokensi were staying with his wife and with a servant. So we had a very pleasant, unexpected reunion. My friend Terry Delamere was also there. And I have a slide of that meeting. There's Dilgo Khyentse standing in the middle, towering even over Terry, who was a six-footer. And, as far as I remember, I'm there too. In the photograph, yes, I think I am.
No,
I'm not, maybe I took it.
Yes, I think you took
it. But anyway, there may be others which are not included in the slideshow because they weren't particularly good, I'll have to check. But anyway, there is Dilgo Khyentse. I'm sure his wife is also there and the servant is there. Maybe a couple of other people. Terry, I think, was there, yes. Perhaps I'm there, perhaps I'm not, I don't really remember. If I'm not there, it must be because I took the photograph. Okay. So that was my last personal contact with him. So as you can see, it was a quite unspectacular contact. In some ways it was very ordinary. But I do remember I was very impressed by him as a character, mainly because of his, you know, lack of pretense, his unassumingness, his friendliness, and his very warm, kindly, quite sweet smile, which he always had. Perhaps I should also make another point here. I don't remember seeing him laughing. He always smiled. Yeah. You see lots of pictures of Tibetan lamas laughing like mad, showing all their magnificent teeth. You know. I've not seen any photograph of Dilgo Khyentse like that. He smiled, huh? But I don't know that he laughed. Certainly not in any sort of way that showed all his teeth and of any raucous sort of way. And of course, you may remember that the Buddha, according to the Pali scriptures, did say that laughter that shows the teeth is madness, and that if you have cause to show your pleasure, it is enough to smile. So, you know, Dilgo Khyentse seems to fit that perfectly. He smiled, and really, a really very beautiful smile, but I don't remember that he ever laughed.
When I saw him, it was the sort of laugh it was a very calm laugh.
And of course, Subhadra did mention the episode of the bitter medicine. Of course, a Tibetan would say it definitely had a symbolical significance, and that he was in a way showing you something. And the medicine is the medicine of the Dharma, which sometimes tastes very bitter, but which you have to get down nonetheless. Perhaps even, you know, incarnate lamas don't always find it easy to practice the Dharma. Perhaps for them also sometimes the medicine, even of the Dharma, is quite bitter. It's quite a bitter pill to swallow. There is, of course, quite a bit of sweetening. But nonetheless, you know, the medicine is medicine and has to be swallowed, whether bitter or sweet, sooner or later. So yes, very likely there was a teaching there. And I further noticed, well, as I said, that was my last meeting with Dilgo Khyentse in Calcutta. But, of course, I used to read about his travels in the West, especially in America. And it's quite clear from the descriptions that people have given of him that his behavior in the West, when he was well-known and famous, and with all sorts of luxuries, even at his disposal, when he was no longer poor, he was exactly the same. The photographs that I've seen of him in America, especially when he smiled, show exactly the same, you know, Dilgo Khyentse that I knew. And I can well understand people in the West, especially in America, being very much attracted by him. I can't help wondering, though, whether they were able fully to appreciate him. Not only those people in Hamburg, but many people in America. Some people seem to want to build him up in a way that I don't think he would have been happy to be built up. And I'm sure in his own way he just didn't permit that. So yes, I have very, very positive memories of him indeed. I was going to say that since I received the Amitabha initiation from him, I do especially associate him with Amitabha. But it has just occurred to me that, well, after all, I did receive those other two initiations, Kurukule and Jambala. So yes, I suppose I could also associate Kurukule with him, because he did have that, not fascinating aspect, that's perhaps too strong a word, but the sort of subtle attractiveness. Subtle attractiveness. You couldn't help liking him or forming a favorable impression at the first glance. No doubt about that. Jambala? Well, Jambala, of course, came to him quite late in life, and he probably didn't bother much about him. In my own case, of course, I don't think Jambala's around for a long chalk yet. So I must say that there has been a change over the years, and that at least I'm now able to buy almost any book I fancy. That's really my new standard of measurement, and I hope that Dilgo Khyentse also, in the latter part of his life, was able to acquire any manuscript, any Tibetan manuscript he fancied to, because yes, he was a very great reader. I didn't know he was a writer, I've only just now learned that from Sri Vajra, and well, it wouldn't be impossible, I suppose, that his writings should eventually be translated, just as John Rinpoche's great work on the Nyingma school has been translated. So we may be able to read his writings one day, or at least you may be able to read his writings one day. But even if that isn't possible, in my own case, I certainly feel that, well, I've been in direct contact with Dilgo Khyentse himself, and in a way with the essence of whatever he might have written. And he does stand out in my memory as really one of the most subtly impressive people I have ever met. And, well, perhaps that is the extent of my reminiscences.